Okay, my name is Tim Davis. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. I work on the rights management core technology, the Azure service, and all the related technology. My colleague here, Enrique Segese, who also works with me closely on these items, and we're here to talk about Azure rights management, how we protect data, and how it's relevant to those organizations which are both going to the cloud and those organizations which are taking different options to still solve their problems on-premise. So we have some kind of great stuff to talk about in general and some specifically new features and components that we're starting to talk about just now here at TechEd. So anyway, there's a few sessions. It's the end of the week, so these will probably be options for you to those of you who want to follow up and learn more about how Azure Rights Management is integrated into other products across Microsoft. These videos are always available on the TechEd Channel 9 website. Some good stuff from my colleagues who have their own sessions, which are built on top of the same technology. And this is more for a takeaway. Okay, well, this is a theme of all of us at Microsoft, and I think throughout the industry, is how do we basically keep people productive and not add friction to their experiences, but still maintain security on your company's information. And that is a difficult problem for us. As we all know, security is often complex and makes things slower or harder to use, but we look at it as sort of a necessary evil. What we're trying to figure out are ways to not have the user have a poor experience protecting data, but still be able to quickly and efficiently communicate with their colleagues while you, as IT governance, maintain the security and protection of your data that's required. So anyway, simple words, you have confidential data, how do we protect it? So we kind of talk about these three pillars. This is part of what, you know, this track is an enterprise mobility suite product line. And the way we like to think about this is, for years you've been managing users. If you can't identify your users and actually control how they authenticate and are authorized to use your resources, you have nothing. We have to start out foundationally who the right people are in your organization and your partners, and what can they do. Second, devices. You obviously manage desktops. I think there's a tremendous amount of passion and energy to bring that same type of technology to managing mobile devices, making sure those are secure, and bringing the same kind of concepts of certificate-based authentication and controlled lockdown of mobile devices. That's the second pillar. And the third, which I think is, of course, unbiased, for me, is the most important part, is actually the data. Once you know who the users are and how they're accessing your data, then the data itself becomes the most important part to protect. And that is a complex problem because the data travels from device to device, it travels between organizations, it travels into repositories like SharePoint, like Dropbox, like email transportation, and certainly sits in classic things like Windows file servers or network attached storage. So all of those places the data goes need to maintain some consistent protection to be complete. Here's some great data that we've pulled out for reality things based on some survey data of our large enterprise customers. I do this all the time. I use personal sharing services to move my documents back and forth between my devices, to my house when I'm working remotely. It's just a difficult problem to lock down. We've actually found that those companies who are trying to restrict this tend to get what we call the whack-a-mole problem by blocking out one consumer service for data sharing, pick your favorite, whether it's SkyDrive or OneDrive, Dropbox, whatnot, 10 more pop up, and it's very hard to control users' behavior in that way. Second, sending data to the wrong person. I have certainly been guilty of this myself, of forwarding a document, having my email sent to the wrong person by accident with the secure data. Fortunately, nothing too serious, but this is a common problem, that especially as we work faster and faster with wider partners. And the third piece is interesting, which is, what is the actual real risk here? Many of our customers are focused on the risks of personal devices, but the same risks applies to a corporate-provided device. When that data leaves the device, how does the protection that you want travel with it? And that's what we're here to focus on with rights management. Our entire kind of vision here is protecting data as it travels between people and organizations. There's fantastic technology available to lock down things in a vertical stack. Those are things like BitLocker, things like classic file ACLs, and authorization control lists and policies. But none of those really work when we actually go move a data, piece of data to a cloud storage, through email, through a USB drive or whatnot, between companies. Some of the pillars for us here. One, any type of file. Your data lives in all sorts of formats. We talk about the best experiences perhaps in Microsoft Office or some of our highly integrated applications that I'll get to in a few moments. But any type of data, XML, unstructured data, we like to be able to apply the same consistent protection. Two, between organizations, protecting data inside your company, critical, where you have a high trust of your users and employees. But actually, when it goes to another company, the question is, how do your own desired policies transfer to that company with still being able to have visibility into the use and access patterns? And then the third piece is the application stack, which is how do you enforce the rights of these things? So not just encryption, but actually what we like to call as rights management, which is how the data is even in fact used. Encryption is sort of a necessary component, but being able to control the entire life cycle, we think, is essential. So these are the things that people tell us. So we like to, again, anchor what we build and design based on real-life problems. One is privacy and data privacy. This is driven largely by many things, but compliance is one of the things. In the United States, we have medical compliance laws called HIPAA. We have many regional compliance that we hear about from our customers. Throughout Europe, each country may have their own rules on what is considered acceptable exposure to data. Another consistent theme is traditional networks are now borderless. The idea of having a firewall and having your data all behind a firewall in silos inside of a corporate managed network, very difficult. Cloud services are one area where this leaks out tremendously. Really, mobile devices in general. The reality of a mobile device, a phone, a tablet or whatnot, is those are coming across public internets and VPN sessions as sort of a matter of course. Next kind of pillar or custom concept is it's very difficult to put the horse back in the barn, so to speak, metaphorically, once the data has gotten out. Scanning tools, fantastic, but actually what's much, much better is your data is born protected, which is when the user creates it. The user, who often is the best assessor of what is sensitive or confidential data, should be able to mark that data right at the time of creation, and then that travels throughout its entire life cycle. Adding scanning tools later is a good protection, but it's almost impossible to get 100% when you're actually post-facto looking for what has potentially traveled through your organization. Another super essential thing is reasoning over data. I think this is one of the things that makes the Azure RMS pattern unique, which is encryption, again, essential to make many of these scenarios functional. But when the data is encrypted but not accessible through automation, you've lost tremendous value. And what I'm talking about are things like indexing, search, any kind of value-added IT service that you apply to your data, e-discovery, journaling through Exchange and email servers, virus scanning. If those workloads cannot access data and perform useful computation over it, you've essentially locked your data up and lost value by adding protection. So one of the things that we really focus on is how to enable programmatic but still secure access to your other workloads. Another big thing is I think about is nothing is perfect. You know, certainly the RMS technology has many places we're still working to fix, and I don't think we'll ever be perfect on this. We'll really focus on kind of the story of go and actually add protection where it's possible now. You can tremendously improve your surface area, your secure surface area, by attacking the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. And last is about collaboration. I'm going to spend a bunch of time later discussing how we actually make sharing securely between organizations much, much easier with RMS technology. Traditionally, we talk about peer-to-peer federation as like ADFS federation or with ADRMS, historically trusted user domain exchange. Those things are just very expensive and do not scale well. Our vision is that sharing secure information, documents, and email should be much the same as sending unsecure email. If you can email someone, I want you to be able to email them securely. That's certainly a vision. We're not there yet, but I think we've made some pretty neat stuff, improvements there. So, kind of paralleling what we've done, any type of file. Historically, RMS was focused on the Office file formats, but the last few years we put a bunch of effort into extending our technology so any structured or unstructured data can be packaged in RMS technology. The experience may vary, you know, in the terms of the applications, but again, it's not just for Office file formats anymore. Making sure the data is protected at all times, not just in flight, not just at rest, but it's persistent and in motion and at rest. Sharing with anyone, you know, again, a big theme for us. We talk about business to business. That is kind of the core scenario that we focus on right now. We're also working on kind of business to consumer. We've heard loud and clear that many of you share confidential data with people with Gmail addresses, Yahoo addresses, or other consumer type of identities. Your partners may be small. They may not have their own IT, and they're relying upon consumer-based services. So being able to reach them securely is also important. So this is sort of the goes pairwise with any file type. So I want to make sure the application experience is fantastic. Again, we focus first and foremost the best experience in things like Microsoft Office. We've built some PDF technology ourselves, working with Adobe to extend that into the Adobe Reader products. But the application integration is an important part of a really fantastic solution where the user experience is much, much better when there's what we call a native or enlightened application with RMS. This is, I think, a big part of our talk today, is we recognize that organizations have different requirements. Some people are kind of all in for cloud-based security. Other customers are more reticent in looking at on-premise security as what's appropriate for their organization. Whether that's for legacy reasons, preference, or compliance, there are many kind of scenarios that are not really addressable in the cloud today. And again, this reasoning over data concept, I think, is one of the key differentiators of RMS and how we actually build this as an IT-centric product, not a consumer kind of PGP or S/MIME solution. So being able to maintain governance and visibility to your data, I think, is an important concept, and having your tools have secure access to protected content. So Azure RMS, this is what we call the Microsoft Information Protection Offer. This is both a product that you can purchase in various ways, but it's also the foundation of security inside of Exchange, inside of SharePoint, inside of Windows Server File Classification, inside of Microsoft Office. And also we have a platform service, so it's generally exposed through things like an SDK and through other workloads. So what is it? Well, this is the end-to-end protection story. You know, how do we start with protected data, and how do we manage its entire life cycle? Built on basically standard technology. It's like PKI concept, RSA keys, AES, symmetric encryption keys. Protocols OAuth, it's what we've been moving toward in the last couple of years. It works with WS Federation and SAML, but generally speaking, it's a knit-together set of standards to handle every piece of the thing. The solution, everything from how do you authenticate and log into your system to what does that data look like once it's encrypted, and how do you essentially make sure the security is provable. Here are the types of problems that we think about. I would hope these things resonate with you. Things like digital leak, data loss protection, classification technology. We have many partners who build RMS into their stacks for handling classification. Once the data is classified, then appropriately policies can be set. How do you control access? What are the authorization policies that are supported? Again, once you've identified sensitive data, to make it useful, you have to decide who can access it, when, where, how. How do I track this? Auditability is a key thing. Again, one of the unique things about RMS as an IT-centric product versus a peer-to-peer encryption technology is you get full visibility to the trackability of the information. Who, where, what has when has your data been accessed? And the life cycle. Again, data sometimes should have an expiration date. Sensitive data may not live forever. You may want to create policies that say certain types of data for compliance reasons must automatically expire in a month, 6 months, 2 years, or not. Those are all up to you, but these are the types of features that you can manage your entire data life cycle with the RMS product. So, how's it work? Well, this is kind of in a nutshell, the summary slide of how RMS actually does its job. So again, kind of our standard example, we have the idea of a secret cola formula, corn syrup, flavoring, and water. This is what a user may be typing in, whether it's in an Office document or in a database, but any kind of unstructured type of data. And then the idea is the data is protected. That's through our software development kits and our applications called the RMS engines. And what you get in the center of the diagram is a encrypted data. And the model is we create a symmetric encryption key for every document that you want to protect. The document is transformed from the clear text objective all in the client. This is a very important point I'm going to emphasize several times throughout our talk here, is we don't ever see your data at the service. We actually want you always to get that locally. I don't want ever your unprotected data passing through our service. I just only want to handle the actual policy and key exchange pieces. Now, in the big red box is the idea of random text. Again, this is the encrypted text, hopefully unreadable. It's all AES key transformed. But the second piece is the policy. The policy I like to think about is the envelope around your data. So taking your clear text data, and then the policy says, what can be done with my data? Who can access it? And the things like what are, can it be read, can it be edited, can it be saved, can it be forwarded? Many of you perhaps have used RMS in Outlook or other products, like do not forward type of features. That's an example of a policy setting. Again, similarly, if I create a document and say, I want you to publish this, but I don't want people to print it, printing is a security risk I find unacceptable in this class of data, that would be an example of another policy right. Just as important, of course, is who can read this data. So the list of the authorized users, those are generally rooted in the AD or the Azure AD. So that's the list of people, the groups who are allowed to read this. And also the standard policies you may apply as IT. So sometimes we allow users to do this themselves. Other times you may configure the system to automatically apply IT-generated policies that have a standard set of people like information auditors, managers, or the appropriate groups who should have access to a certain types of data classification. Now, how does this work when you actually go to decrypt the data? You know, if it was one way, it would be not so useful. Later, when the original user or some other person who you shared this data with goes to decrypt it and access it, the way this works is the application takes a look at this envelope, contacts the RMS server for an authorization decision. If that person or entity is correctly authorized in the policy that's been created, the RMS server returns back the artifacts for the symmetric key to decrypt the data. So again, in the application, the data is then decrypted, and the application enforces the rights that you have given to that piece of data. Again, if you're in something like Microsoft Word, you may have rights to edit the document, add commentary or review notes, but not print it or forward it to anyone else. That's kind of the complete application experience that the user may see. Actually, there's a few other things I should mention here too. This is, again, I think the unique features of RMS as an enterprise or IT-centric product is the fact that the service is contacted for all these access patterns are what allow you to do some really cool things, like audit the data. Again, if this was a peer-to-peer encryption technology, you would lose visibility to who has accessed the data. You'd also lose visibility to revoking the access data, so you may have a document that was incorrectly shared. The fact that every subsequent access requires a transaction back to a central server allows you to basically add the expiration or lifecycle pieces there. And it also is where you get the control of the data lifecycle as it flows between companies, not just at the container, but actually at the data itself. So these are the pieces that we actually kind of build the solution on top of. One, encryption. All these things don't really work if the data can be open in clear text. You know, having the data remain secret and require that transaction to get access to it is sort of the foundation and the core. Second is the access control. If you can't name the people who have access to the data, it's not very useful. So this is all founded in the Active Directory. The people who are users can be groups, they can be individual users, they can be service principals, but again, it's all managed through standard AD technology. The policy enforcement mentioned which individuals can edit documents, save, print. This can be different lists, too. You may have policies you create that say these users are generally view only, but these other sets of users and group members of groups have full control of the data, so that way you can actually have differential access control on the same data, even within or outside your company. And things like access logging. We capture a fairly rich set of information, and that's always available to you as the IT governance of how this data was accessed by whom. You can run those reports or that data into your own CM systems or build your own reports, taking whatever analytics that you find useful. You know, this is, I think, a big topic for today here is the deployment options. And I'm going to go through three different options, hopefully covering a large fraction of the type of scenarios that you may be assessing. So if you don't see your scenario at first, we'll see if we hit them at one of the first three. So types of customers. We're all in for the cloud. These are the customers who are choosing O365 or moving their IT infrastructure to the cloud as quickly as possible. How does this work? We talk about being cloud ready. If you choose to use Microsoft Azure Rights Management Service, you're generally basically using Azure Active Directory. Everything that we do in the Azure Rights Management Service is, again, rooted in Azure Active Directory for authentication and access control. Speaking sort of, again, the OAuth type of protocol stack or AWS Federation protocol stack, as long as your users have an identity in the Active Directory cloud, those will work with RMS. virtually every large organization still is running most of their IT on-premise for AD. So again, it's a synchronization, AAD sync or DIR sync, or how those identities are shared. So all the things you'd expect, single sign-on experience, single password, all rooted through the identity sync here. And then this is deeply integrated into O365, the workloads of Exchange Online, SharePoint Online. Soon, I think we've announced this week that OneDrive for Business is deeply integrated with RMS built in. So all you have to do is enable RMS and those other workloads light up. And then for those of you who need a different level of key assurance, we build a thing called Bring Your Own Key, where you actually can provision the encryption key lifecycle on-premise and synchronize your key directly to a Azure Key Management Service, which is an HSM-backed solution. There are some limitations on that, but we'll talk about those in a few moments. Kind of second class of customers, we think, are people who are maybe putting one foot into the cloud or have some data they want to keep on-premise. Very typically, customers maybe moving to O365, maybe they have 10,000 mailboxes, but they will only do 5,000 for the first year, keep 5,000 on-premise, so they may have some certain sensitive data they keep on-premise mailboxes forever. So again, we call these hybrid type of cases. So again, same sort of picture here. Still have Azure RMS, you still have Active Directory. But now, you may or may not have O365. Hopefully you're assessing that, but if not, we're still happy to light up your on-premise workloads. These are things like the SharePoint and Exchange Windows file server on-premises. And what we do is drop a small piece of technology called the Azure RMS connector. This allows you to bridge your on-premise workloads back to Azure RMS. Now, one important thing in this picture here is, all of the key transactions are still handled by Azure RMS. All of your desktops and mobile devices still talk to Azure RMS. So your key material is in the cloud, but your data stays on-premise. If you, again, have certain workloads, SharePoint can have workloads in the cloud, on-premise, we wouldn't care. They're all still rooted in the same security, so you get the benefits of having centralized policy, centralized control of your encryption stack, logging, but you still run the workload of your choice. Down here in the bottom left, I talk about some of the requirements. Depending on how much, what other cloud services that you have, we've basically built in various profiles into the AAD sync tools. So if you're only using Azure RMS, we need a very light footprint for the user attributes that you store. If you're using Exchange, I think you need something like 113 attributes off your user objects and your AD. If you're just using Azure RMS, we get that down to about 13, which is generally just your email addresses, group names, and your proxy address fields. So again, strong customer feedback is make this as light as possible. But the other things you'll still see, if you're still using the Azure Directory, and that's a key part of the solution, again, not just for your users, but for your collaboration with other companies. And we're expecting that to be the collaboration trust fabric. Okay, now, those customers who are not going to the cloud, lots of good reasons. I usually kind of just pick on compliance as sort of an easy target. Many customers we've talked to throughout Europe, United States, just can't put encrypted material into the cloud. That violates their regulatory requirements. It may just be a corporate policy. It may just be preference. But we still want to make sure Azure RMS works for those customers so the users get a consistent experience if you have not deployed a cloud security service. So in this picture, we'll start out with people saying, oh, I have Windows Server Active Directory. I have workloads. I have SharePoint Exchange Windows File Server on-premise. Well, this is not what you need. So what, obviously not needed again, if you're not using Azure RMS, you have no reason to put your keys into the cloud here. But what we do is we now have something we're launching early next year into preview, and by mid-year as a generally available product called the Azure RMS Hub. Still part of the Azure RMS family, but this is what will allow you to run the Azure RMS feature set on-premise in your own data center, keeping all of your keys and your authorization logic on-premise. Same core technology, same feature set, same user experience, but again, you can deploy this on-premise as essentially a private cloud version of the Azure RMS stack, and it will integrate with your workloads, integrate with your clients, and all of your transactions inside of your company are local to you. No cloud logging, no cloud visibility, completely under control inside of your data center. What we still do, though, is we still have you synchronize to the Azure Active Directory, and this is for external collaboration. When you do share documents through email or through cloud drives or whatnot with your partners, we're still using the Azure Active Directory as the trust point. So again, from an identity management standpoint, we're expecting every large organization to eventually have an Azure Active Directory account, which is how we'll let you share data, even though the keys are on-premise, the data is on-premise. When you actually collaborate with your partners, we'll do all that through an Azure Active Directory collaboration point. In this, I don't have a picture of this on the screen, but again, in this case, all of your mobile clients, all of your desktop clients, all of your server workloads, all talk on-premise. They all go back to your own network, not to the cloud. Okay. One big restriction on this is, in this case, O365 is not integrated with the Azure RMS Hub Stack, so you do lose some functionality to use O365 integration directly. You would need to use the Azure RMS cloud service. So that's the probably one big trade-off that we make on this particular design. So again, if you're not using O365 or you don't need a security integration, fantastic. The hub will totally solve your problems. At least we hope it totally solves your problems. But you do have the trade-off of no O365 integration in this case. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about this consistent theme of how we collaborate and sort of what we saw the traditional way people did this and how we're moving forward with an Azure Active Directory-centric model. Kind of classic, four companies and what we call peer-to-peer trust. What does this look like? Well, when you need to trust someone else, you end up having to have an explicit relationship with each company. You can see there's only six lines on this diagram with four companies, but most of us collaborate with far more than four companies. I think the statistics we have at Microsoft is we email something like 8,000 different companies on an average day inside about Microsoft, and it's probably far more than 8,000 if we actually track it reliably. This does not scale well. And these are the technologies that you're probably familiar with, things like ADFS Federation. If you've been using an on-premise AD RMS product, you're going to use what we call a trusted user domain certificate exchange, or other PKI products where you actually may have to trust people's certificates and manually import different PKI certs into your own PKI infrastructure. Certainly works, but it is very painful, and our survey data of many of our customers indicates this has been a massive pain point, and it doesn't really well address things like social identity providers. Again, if you want to collaborate with Gmail users or Yahoo users or Weibo users in China, there's no easy way to trust those directly from your on-premise infrastructure. So what we've been working on with my colleagues in the Azure AD team is making this scenario, the go-forward architecture reference designs from Microsoft. Again, simple case, Contoso, Fabricam, you both have active directories. Once you federate or synchronize those directories to Azure AD, then all of the collaboration is done for identity exchange through Azure AD. So again, you think about this as trust once to Azure AD, and that will be the claims broker between you and all of your partners. And then the benefit here is rather than having to create N connections for each of your partners, which again, for many reasons, not the least of which is you don't know who your partners are necessarily for sharing data. Just like email, one of your users can send data to any person in the world. If you trusted Azure Active Directory once, all we need to do is get those other companies trusting Azure AD, and you sort of solve this problem with one single configuration. But you still maintain your own policies. Again, nothing here implies that Azure AD is the authorization engine. This is just the authentication bridge, if you will, or what we call the trust fabric. If you're running Azure RMS Hub, for example, you would still maintain all of your keys on-premise, all of your control on-premise, but just the identity claims can pass through and be signed by Azure AD. So that kind of is the foundation piece of how we make that work. Oops, let's skip here. Okay, now let's talk about actually how this really is experienced by users. It's not going to all slide where, but what a user actually gets and how we think we've spent a ton of time making user experience just much, much better. I don't count time here. Okay, users use things like Office products, we hope. So what we've built is deep integration into Office 2010 and Office 2013. You can see we've actually extended the experience with this share protected charm at the top of the screen here. And also we get into Windows Shell and also built this into device applications, what we call the RMS sharing app. So if you're coming from a device, you can still send a secure document from Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Mac or other platforms here. How does it work? Well, in this case, a user is going to author some experience. Maybe it's a financial report or 10Q draft filing, or maybe it's just a list of reports on credit card information inside your company, whatever it is. But the user would generally know, okay, this is a secure document. I'm sending it to another user, so perhaps inside or outside of my company. And by choosing to share protected, that piece of information will be natively encrypted inside of the Office application. And then the policy, again, the recipient list, is added to the document. And then it goes out and sent. And here's what it looks like. Oops. The document's attached. It's been transformed. You can see if you look at the extension, it could be a document format, or it could be what we call a P file, which is how we wrap up generic formats that we don't have a native application for yet. And then when the user consumes these things, you can see the classic banner that we put across the top of the Office experience, for example, or the PDF experience, which is, it tells the reader this is sensitive information. It enforces all of that policy that's been applied, so things like the print control button may be disabled, or the save button, or whatever the appropriate application right is restricted or enforced accordingly. And these are all the policy settings that you as IT would design. So this one, I think I'm using an example here, is sensitive information. You could have arbitrary numbers of policies for different types of information. You can have things like marketing data or engineering R&D or financial 10Q filings. And whatever the appropriate set of people and rights for that information class will be displayed here to the receiver and enforced. So again, if you have something like a 10Q filing, like it's a U.S. security stock filing, you may say it's only readable by my finance department or a subset of my executives. And again, it makes it easier for the user to apply the right information, get the right behavior without having to know exactly the recipient list they should worry about. That would be something that you as IT would provide to them. Now, what are some interesting issues about this? Well, here's what this actually looks like. So once we have sent one of these protected, or created one of these protected documents, here's the next thing is, ideally, everyone will be using like a native enlightened experience, hopefully Office or whatever the appropriate application is. Reality is not every mobile platform has an Office, not every user on every mobile platform has a version of Office that supports all of the RMS technology quite yet. Certainly it's the plan that we're working on, but in the interim, what we do is we create a protected PDF copy of the document as well and include that with the email. So depending on where the user reads this document, they may have a native Office experience with full fidelity, or they may read it as a PDF experience on these platforms. So again, on places like Android, iOS platforms, Mac platforms, the recipient can still get access to the secure document. Your security is still maintained. Encryption and policy are enforced. We actually provide a free RMS app experience in those platforms. So this PDF format opens on Mac, opens on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, even in the absence of a IRM-enabled Office installation. And that is something we actually just launched about 3 months ago. And the essential problem that we had to fix was if you protect documents and the recipients can't open them on an Android device where the majority of their work is happening, we've completely failed to serve the user. So again, the most important thing is that you're highly confident that the recipient can always log in and open the document. That's the intention here. So what does that look like? Well, we're going to draw that same scenario out as scenarios here. Again, if you're in a native format, let's say like using Word or Outlook or Microsoft Stack or one of our partners who have a deeply integrated stack into their apps, you get essentially full control, access control, authentication, the document is protected and transient at rest, and you have full control of whether you offer read, edit, write experience. If the recipient is using a device or an application without a full IRM integration using the PDF version, you get the same 4 points at first. Basically, you get access controls applied, the document's encrypted, protected at rest and in motion, but it's only a read-only experience. We do not support editing and manipulating PDF files on mobile devices. So again, you can still access the information, read it, but if you're on a non-Office format, for example, it's a read-only experience. Here's something cool. We actually added it again a couple of months ago. I think we launched it into preview in August and should be generally available as a finished feature in about another couple of weeks, is email notification. Again, we're talking about sensitive information. So one of the things we think is super cool is saying, hey, I just sent a sensitive document out. And because this is all mediated by the Azure RMS server, we actually can notify you as soon as someone reads your document. So one of the options is you send a document out. You can request email notification. As soon as someone opens that document, we send you a email of someone opened your blog post document or whatever that would be. So you can get something like near real-time information of who's reading your document. And just as importantly, you can get access for who was trying to read your document and was not supposed to. So this is the case where RMS is doing its job. It's protecting your information, but it's also tracking who has tried to access your secure documents and failed. Now, that may be good. That may be your desired intention, or you may have made a mistake. So your users may have applied a policy to a document, it was sent out, and then they realize, oh, in this particular case, Alice Hikantoso was denied access to reading this blog post. I wanted Alice to read that. That was a mistake that I actually inadvertently left her off the policy. I can then email Alice and say, oops, I forgot to include you on this list. Sorry about that. Here's an updated document with the new policies that she can set. Someday we'll allow you to dynamically fix that on the fly, but at least today you can see who's been trying to read the document and, again, adjust it. Or scenarios like you may realize that there may be a ton of people reading your document that you inadvertently did not mean to. So you may actually have applied an overly permissive policy to a piece of secure information that notifies you saying, oh, my goodness, that's not what I intended. I need to fix that. And I'm going to talk about how we actually will do that here in a second. I have a few slides there for a sneak preview of some things that we haven't launched yet, but I will expose on how we handle tracking and revocation on those types of scenarios. Okay, well, how does this work? So one, Azure RMS, it's a cloud service. I think one of the tremendous benefits of any cloud service is a simple provisioning and deployment cycle. So Azure RMS, you get a single click. Literally, it comes with an O365, E3, or E4 enterprise service. It can be added on to any other compliant or compatible service plan, E1, E2, for example. Or it can be purchased directly. It comes with EMS. So if you're looking at EMS products, Azure RMS comes with that. And then bang, one click, it's enabled at the Office Admin Center. You can activate or deactivate that. Now, if you want to do additional configuration, we certainly give you a richer editing experience of custom policies. But again, no running servers, no buying HSMs, no having to install new VMs in your network. Up in the cloud, one click, good to go. Managing templates, again, a simple web-based interface, creating custom policies, which I'll show you a more detailed view in the next slide. These are the policies that you as IT can set, which are then automatically distributed to your users' workstations or their mobile devices. Things like saying, hey, this policy for this type of document says the document never expires. It's something we might keep archival forever. Or you can say this type of secure document, let's say, again, it's a financial filing. You may want to say that does not live more than 3 months because that's the cycle, or it's a press release, and after this press release, we actually want to kill all the draft versions so I don't ever have to expose what we were thinking about. So you get to define the life cycle in your policy management tools. You can also control things like whether the documents are accessible offline. We have many cases where customers have what they consider super sensitive information that they would require an online-only experience, so the clients must be online, authenticate in real time to open a document. So, for example, you lose things like being able to open on an airline, but that may be acceptable for certain classes of document information. And then you can see what shows up here is you can have essentially an arbitrary number of these policies. There are some practical limits we'll talk about, which how many the clients can see, but from a service standpoint, 5, 10, 500, whatever makes you happy. And there's a feature that I'll talk about, which is called scoped or departmental templates, which we're launching in a couple of weeks to allow you to define hundreds of policies, but only select which ones apply to which users. So you can customize the user's view of the policies most appropriate to their job function. Now, this is the cool part. This is the integration with O365. The same integration would apply to on-premise, Exchange, and SharePoint workloads. Those policies that we just created now are accessible in introduced in things like the Exchange DLP engine. So Exchange has a fantastic data loss prevention feature that runs in their transport pipeline. So every message that passes through Exchange can be scanned to match information policy settings that you control. Again, you can scan for things like credit card numbers, for things that say company confidential, things that match medical record information, if you have patient identification numbers. All those things are basically real-time checked for every message that passes through Exchange. And RMS can be applied to those messages to make that now managed, secure, encrypted data. So the idea is we don't necessarily want to not allow users to email things like patient records between them, but just make sure it's appropriately protected. And then RMS then will enforce, as the recipient gets a message which has been flagged by your rules as sensitive, then that message is tracked, it's logged, it's encrypted, and it can't go further, so that you can limit the things like being a user mistakenly forwarding information outside your company that contains confidential data or medical records that would potentially cause you some grief if they were exposed to the wrong people. Those same policy templates that I just mentioned are all will show up in this list. So again, if you define the appropriate policy templates for your organization, you can reuse those in the Exchange DLP rules. Okay, on time here. Now, data governance, this is another cool thing. This is really another fantastic feature of Exchange Online. This is actually pushed all the way down to the client. So if you're using an Office 2013 client, for example, Outlook 2013, those data governance rules are actually show up directly to the end users. So you can see what we call as policy tips. If the user is typing in some data, which matches one of the classification rules that you've configured, the user can be warned on the fly, hey, it looks like you're typing in confidential data. This is an external recipient. Are you sure you want to do this? You get to control whether that actually is possible. You can actually restrict that. You can warn the user that that will be an audited action, quarantine the message, automatically CC their manager if that's the appropriate action. But again, RMS is then used as the enforcement mechanism all the way down to the client. So a rule that matches data the end user is typing up will actually be can be automatically RMS protected as it leaves the client machine. So again, going back to the idea of the data is now born protected. Hopefully we've helped educate the user. This is an important information based on your corporate governance standards, and then let them get that data protected right as it's born, not try to find it later and retroactively protect it. Same thing here in the lower right side, Windows Server File Services is integrated with rights management. If you have a file share, you can run more classification rules against all documents found on that file share. If they match a policy that's appropriate to your organization, those documents are automatically RMS protected on the file share. So the scenario is a user may upload a document, an Excel file with confidential financial models. It matches your rules for being classified. RMS protection is automatically added by the file share. So the next time the user goes to open it, still native Excel format or whatever the document type is, but now RMS is added to it, so it's encrypted and protected with policy on it. And then again, that file is inadvertently disclosed outside of the file share. It's still safe because that data is now encrypted and mastered to the policy you set. So again, it allows you to automate some of the user's burden and become sort of more of a bucket to catch all the data that the users may have not correctly categorized when they were creating it. So again, we're a platform. Oops, I went too far. We're a platform, so we recognize that it's important for many of our customers to actually have a lot more customization of the experience than we put out of the box. You know, we like to think of ourselves as the 80% case, which is hopefully we've covered all your basic scenarios. But many of you have customized vertical requirements or even breadth requirements, and our partners to help us fill in those gaps. We have things like classification, Titus, Watchful. Folks like that have fantastic classification systems, have much more complex taxonomies that are appropriate to your vertical market. We have partners with MDMs. We recognize that making RMS integrated into mobile device application and device management stacks is an essential piece. Work with folks who are Cloud Drive vendors. We work with folks who are obviously Adobe, third-party ISV partners that are important to us. So that's where our platform and SDK reach is an important part of our solution. Okay, a couple of new things. For those of you who are familiar with RMS in the past, these are things we've been adding for the last couple of months. They're just coming to market now. One is this toolkit. Many customers who have been running AD RMS, the Windows Server role, for years, have asked, how do I migrate to the Azure RMS cloud and get all these new benefits and features? That's a set of tools and processes we've just launched into preview a few weeks ago. Should be generally available, I think, within a few more weeks. Another really important feature that people have asked for years, we finally figured out how to do this effectively, is controlling which users have access to RMS. Again, you may actually not want to have every user generating RMS content. Or roll this out slowly, so if you have 10,000 users, you may want to match the deployment of RMS to the training or the other licensing requirements you may have. So we have tools that will now allow you to basically control both license assignment and selective enforcement on which users get access to RMS when they automatically bootstrap their clients. Mac Outlook 2015, this has been a gap. Mac Outlook 2011 did not support Azure RMS, so the latest version that has in public beta as of, I think, a few weeks ago, has full Azure RMS support built in with our most modern SDKs. Kind of great stuff. Windows 10 is an important starting point for us. We're building... Oh, I'm sorry, question?
Yes, a question regarding the Mac support. Uh-huh. Will it be supported in the Word and Excel?
Yes, it's a great question. So Mac Outlook is the first piece that's coming to market. Mac Office in general, vNext, will also support Azure RMS. I don't have an ET on that, but I think when you see that version coming out, probably mid-next year, that will also be Azure RMS integrated. Windows 10 Enterprise Data Protection has deep integration with Azure RMS built in. If you think about the scenarios, every piece of data that you designate on a Windows 10 Enterprise Data Protection feature is actually using the same policies in RMS keychain to protect that data. And a super fantastic example is when that data leaves a Windows 10 box and is emailed or moved to a different location, the RMS protection now travels with it. So the policy will be added to the data automatically. And if you drag a file, for example, from a Windows 10 EDP share into an Outlook attachment, you automatically keep the RMS protection onto the data. So again, from a data is born protected standpoint, we make it easy for users. You as IT can enable Windows 10, hopefully deploy, and then enable Windows 10 EDP. And your users now have less to worry about. Their data is automatically protected as they write it, create it, and save it. And that protection now transparently moves with the data as it leaves the Windows 10, but still with RMS protection, so it's readable with appropriate permissions, whether it's on a Windows 7, Mac box, or whatnot. Departmental templates, I mentioned this. This is sometimes we call them scope templates. This is, I think, a super fantastic feature that Rike can answer some questions about in a few moments. This is the feature where you may define 10, 50, 100 information policy templates for your organization, but really, users only often want to see 3 or 4 relevant to their job function. So allowing you to create templates and this only distribute the appropriate set of templates to the appropriate users. So for example, I may say I have a set of information policies or templates relevant to your finance department. That's the who, what can be done with these, that might be financial filings. Those would be a different set of templates than you would actually distribute to your marketing, different than you might distribute to your operations staff. So again, a user only has to make a decision from a set of 3 or 4 templates which to apply, not look at a long list of 100 templates and have to make an educated guess on what's appropriate for their job. Things that are coming soon, document tracking. This is fantastic. Now again, everything that we do in RMS has an audit log entry generated. Historically though, those have been kind of poor logs. The data was missing some essential fields that we've been working on fixing, so the schema is improved. And we also want to make that available to end users. One of the important themes that I'm looking at from an RMS standpoint is how do we make this a more productivity tool for end users, not just a security tool. Security is the reason why we build this product. That's the first and first mission. But making it a value to end users, not just a friction point. So we're looking at some things that will, I think, be very interesting for end users. Second, revoking a document. I need a better name for it. We were possibly calling it forced expiration or whatnot. But this is where I realized I sent out the wrong document. It might be the wrong version of some data. It might have been last year's price list I sent to my marketing partners. Afterwards, I go, oops, that's the wrong one. I want to kill that data so I don't have to answer questions about it for the next 6 months of why it was the wrong document. Simply put, an end user can go into a portal or right-click on the document, click Manage, and then be able to revoke access, at which point that time document will be no longer openable by anyone. So again, it's kind of a remote document kill feature. I think it's pretty fun stuff. I mentioned spend some time on the Azure RMS Hub. This will be in preview in Q1 of next year, and then hopefully GA'd based on quality by mid-year calendar 15. Super important project for us. Been hard at work on that for the better part of a year now. And then a feature that I just want to acknowledge has been often asked for is consumer identity sharing. So again, today you really can't share an RMS document effectively to someone who's a Gmail or Yahoo or Weibo user. We're relying upon features from my partner organization in Azure AD to light up what we call Consumer Identity Federation. Hopefully that will be available in Q2 timeline, perhaps March or April. And that will be, again, transparent. Nothing should be required from you other than the policy decisions to allow or disable that. Okay, so I think I actually want to show you actually some screenshots of what we're working on. This is the fun new stuff for document tracking. This is what an end user would see starting from their document, confidential.docx, we chose an example. Kind of be a tile-based experience. Get some summary statistics. This is just a web portal that will be run in, as part of your Azure service. Get a look at when you shared the document, you know, what expiration, if any, you've set on it. And the statistics, like it's been opened 26 times by 5 different users. It's been forwarded several times. It's another thing we can track for you as we launch some cool new forwarding features into this market. How active is the document? If you can tell, you know, if no one's opened this in 3 days, you as a user might go, okay, that document is fully distributed. I don't, you know, or it may be an active document if you see people still opening it frequently. It might be interesting to you. And of course, the red tile on the top is how many times people have tried to open it and failed. And that's a case when, A, you might be saying, fantastic, that RMS is doing its job, it's protecting my document appropriately, or realize that you did not include the appropriate policy and those people who are trying to open it shouldn't have access and you can actually take corrective action. And then down there at the bottom of this page, we always allow you to open this full list of information in Excel. So if you have 5 or 6 people who are opening the document, it's pretty easy to see this list. If you have several thousand, we don't necessarily want you to have to scroll through a long, long list. We'll just allow you to pop it open, export a CSV file, and have some nice Excel templates, which give you some more detailed analytics. Really much more appropriate for IT as well. I think if you, as an IT governor, would want to take a look at this data, you know, Excel or some other analytics tools might be the appropriate choice. But anyway, go back to here. This is what we would see from the list view. Who's opened it, when, and where they got it from. So this is a feature that we actually have not fully designed yet, which is the what I call the chain of custody, but we're working on that for the forwarding features. The list of viewed and not viewed, again, we take this interesting productivity kind of scenario for an end user by saying, well, who's viewed my document, but who's not viewed it? I may have sent it to several people and actually want to say, well, I want to remind them, to, say it's a document, I'm going to have a meeting, and I want people to have reviewed my document before they get there. I can actually send them a reminder mail here saying, hey, you haven't reviewed this document yet. Could you take a look at this before we get together? There are some challenges here for things like distribution groups. If you're sharing to distribution group, we generally don't expose that to end users to see the membership distribution groups for privacy reasons. But hopefully this is a good thing. Some summary timeline views. Again, if you have a large number of people you sent a document to, like a large company-wide distribution list, you probably wouldn't really care about every single person's access to it, but I may want to see the timeline of when the document was accessed, when it was most failures happened, and then I can actually make some decisions by saying, oh, interesting, this document has actually now been essentially fully distributed and read because I have seen no accesses for the last 5 or 6 days. Mapping views, again, kind of fun. You might say, hey, look, people are opening my document I sent out from Australia, and now I'm seeing people all across the world open this. Maybe it's actionable. Maybe you could say, oh, fantastic, I have a lot of people who are consuming my information in my remote office in North America. Or I may look at it and say, wow, I'm seeing a bunch of failures from someone in Japan. This is completely strange that someone's actually even opening my document in Japan. I may want to notify IT saying, looks like our data is leaking out here, and we did not expect it to be opened in those places. Now, when I want to revoke a document, I can actually click here. One of the important things is because of the technical architecture of RMS, we notify the user that the end users may have a license already in place so that revocation is not necessarily instantaneous. There may be people who have already opened the document and they may still have access for a few more days. They might be traveling or they might be on an airplane, so the local cached version is still live for a few more days. But then those of you who have not opened it yet, This is a way for the user to type in a message saying, hey, I'm revoking this document. It's old sales data. Here's a link to the new copy. So when someone goes to open it, they actually get some clue why they're being denied access when they may have had it before. We also have a feature that notifies users. So we'll send an email automatically from the Azure RMS service to the recipients if the document has been revoked, so to proactively notify them with the same message here. Sure.
One way to think about this, as you probably know, it's very difficult to convince users to engage any security product. They don't care about security in general. They will give you their passwords for a bar of chocolate. So convincing them to actually think about protecting their stuff is hard. They don't care. They don't care enough. But on the other hand, most users are control freaks. They like to control their stuff. They like to understand where it goes, how it's used. Who hasn't shared the wrong information, sent the wrong email, or disclosed the wrong information and wish you could recall that? Or who doesn't occasionally ask, where is this document I was working on? Or I added a paragraph here and I don't see in the version editing. There must be somewhere, some other version of this document that contains that content. Or maybe, which is the latest version of this document? Or the common, I sent a memo and received no feedback. Did they even read it? Did they care? Or they just say, oh, another email from this guy, I'm going to ignore it. The fact that they can now understand how the data is being used, that they send a document or they share something or they create something, and now they can say, how is this data being used? How is this, did they read the memo? Where is the latest version of this document? Or they can fix their mistakes. They share this and they say, oops, I should recall that. And if I don't protect this, I won't be able to ever do that. So they can make a habit of protecting everything they care about. And they don't care about security still, but they care about saving skin, about being more efficient, about controlling their stuff. So I think that this feature, besides the fact that it gives you more control and allows you to understand your stuff, it makes people care about this. It makes people engage more with RMS and pay the small price of clicking two more buttons before saving a document, because they get a lot in return. And now they can actually be in control even after they shared something, even with another company, or learn about partnerships. They send a document to another company, and suddenly they say, oh, these other two guys in this company care about these. I'm going to engage with them as well. Those kinds of scenarios will make them much more engaged and much more interested in actually protecting their stuff. Tim?
Actually, do I have power? And it goes without saying, all this data is, of course, IT accessible. These are all standard logs. You'll be able to import this data into any other tools for deeper analysis. Again, these interfaces are, of course, end-user-centric, but you, as IT governance, may have tens of thousands of users. This would not be the appropriate tool. We would actually recommend you pull this into an offline analytical engine, run whatever reports make sense, and show much more enterprise views of the data, including applying, revocation programmatically. So all these things are generally exposed through an API at the service. If you have additional tools or ISVs who want to create your own governance models on top of this data feed, that's actually where we'd point you to. Okay, well, here's what this is. It's kind of a recap of the things we talked about today. We're all about keeping your data safe. That's what we spend enormous amounts of our time and energy thinking about. I like to acknowledge that it's an ecosystem. It's Microsoft and our partners, not just the RMS team, it's the Office team internally to Microsoft, it's my partners in the Exchange and SharePoint and OneDrive teams, and very importantly, our ISV partners round out our solution across the board. So wherever you have data, whatever applications it's being used, we actually want to make sure that RMS protection can appropriately be applied, if that makes sense for you. And we definitely have more work to go. I think there's many cases when the experience is not ideal. And I think I'd like to acknowledge that up front. Again, you have these different customer types, whether you're cloud ready, cloud accepting, or cloud reluctant, whether you need explicit control of your keys in HSMs or not. Those are all scenarios we think are important to cover. And In the world where you're sharing data more and more quickly across larger and larger networks of virtual partners, inside and outside your networks, we think RMS is a fantastic choice to transcend those issues and be data-centric protection, not just file-centric protection. So now I actually kept, of course, there's a few places you can actually get tremendously more amounts of information. We are super customer focused in our group. So please give us an email, drop us a line, follow our blogs or tweets, and we would love to hear more from you. Question?
Yes, you said that we can protect the documents from any device. How can we protect documents from iOS, iPhone, iPad? How can we create protected documents?
Okay, that's a great question. So this is one of the parts where there are, pardon?
Can I repeat the question?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The question was, so protecting documents from any device, how does that work? This is where I think our story is actually especially weak right now. So we ship an RMS sharing app on all those major mobile platforms, but that app is limited on the file it can protect. Generally speaking, you can protect documents of photos and text files. It is not built into Office on those platforms yet. So you should expect to see information from my colleagues in the Office team of how to actually create a document on an iPad with Office iPad, for example, and actually have the protection applied directly from those devices for content authoring. And it's an interesting challenge for both us and I think Microsoft and the industry is mobile platforms generally don't support an add-in model. So many of the ways we've customized Office on desktop and Mac platforms, actually really Windows, in fact, is the dominant place, are not really accessible in mobile applications. That's something we're working on and building more functionality directly into the Office stack, so protecting documents. And that you should see that also from some of our partners who have Polaris Office or some other stacks being able to generate native IRM protection from their mobile clients, but not in market yet.
Can I ask a question here? Mm-hmm. How important do you think is authoring mobile devices? I mean, consumption is massively important. That is obvious. But how many users create content that is unprotected in a device and protected? And we know that there are some cases in which they are interested in doing that, but is that something that is vital? Should we prioritize that? Or in most cases, well, as long as you can view and reply or edit or something like that, whatever is necessary, but not the function of taking unprotected content and protecting it to share with others. Do you think they can live with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so email is very important. Documents, not as much for protecting, for authoring.
Documents, devices are changing. So nowadays with iPad, you can really create documents.
Mm-hmm. So more on the tablet side, you will like to see the ability to create. Regarding email, we have two models for email today. One of them is a rich email client that can actually protect content in itself and has the keys and everything like that. We also work through Exchange Active Sync, in which the client just tells Exchange what to do, and it says, please encrypt this email and that kind of thing. That is available now in several email clients, and in many cases you can author. For example, NitroDesk or Samsung's mobile devices, they do that. It's slightly different functionality because it relies on Exchange. If you are using some third-party email server, it won't work, but if you're using Exchange, it allows you to protect those kinds of emails. It's not yet on Apple's native email client, but there are email clients for Apple that do that, such as, well, we mentioned Tidus a few minutes ago, NitroDesk does a version for iOS, and there are others either already or coming, and future versions of Office will do that. So email, I won't say it's a solved problem, but it's much closer. If you really care, you can do it today. Documents, we are still working on that, and consumption is coming relatively soon. Authoring, we'll have to wait a little bit more, but not too long. It's still coming.
Yeah, and I think it's an important point. It is absolutely the vision that this will be a full experience in the fullness of time on those devices. You know, I think tablets are fantastic. You know, I have heard many different customer stories the last couple of days. I've been traveling throughout Europe, meeting with large customers, and their executives are often using iPads only. So that is a must-have scenario for us. I can't talk too much about when the timeline comes today publicly, but I can tell you back in Redmond, people are working that day over day. So we have about 10 more minutes. I just have to open this up for questions in general. My slides are done here for now. Over here.
Is there a possibility for bulk operations, like protecting and unprotecting thousands of files?
The question is about bulk operations. Yeah, we have tools. There's a couple of things that we support. One is, again, this is an IT product, so you can configure what we call super user groups who can access any document in your organization. That's a setting at the service. You specify which individuals have full access. Then we have what we call bulk protection tools. There is some work we're doing to improve that. We found there's a few gaps in our tooling for bulk manipulation, but absolutely.
In particular, bulk protection of documents is fairly straightforward. You can't just take a whole folder and say, right-click protect, or use the bulk tools, or use the PowerShell commandlets. Emails, we have some old tools that can help with that. We are updating our tooling to have a better experience for bulk protecting emails. For now, bulk protection in email is generally done through Exchange. You say, any email sent by this guy to this other organization, whatever, you automatically protect, and that works fairly well. We also have integration with third parties, such as the aforementioned Titus, GigaTrust, Liquid Machine, Secure Islands. All those can do automatic backend protection or bulk protection or that kind of thing, and they're pretty good at that and handling rules and behaviors and things like that.
Okay, more questions, sir?
About the management of the hub RMS functionality on premises, would it look like Intune console? When you do real management from the cloud, or how it works?
So how will the management of the Azure RMS Hub work? We will have a console that talks on-premises to your on-premises server. It's going to be web-based. It's a web-based console, but it talks to your on-premises. It doesn't go to the cloud. So it can work even on an isolated environment. If you are in a bunker, you can still manage your on-premise RMS. And that's one interesting aspect about RMS Hub that we didn't speak about. RMS Hub is integrated with the cloud and can work with other organizations through the cloud, but your internal behaviors, your internal communications, your internal flows, if I belong to this company and I send you a document that belongs to this company, that stays on premises. Those logs happen on premises, the keys, policy, everything happens on premises. We never talk to the cloud for that. In fact, when I collaborate with somebody else, I send somebody else a document and I don't talk to the cloud. They authenticate through the cloud, and then they come to me on premises, so my logs are still on premises, everything still remains on premises. So for those companies that are a bit more paranoid and that want to keep everything under tight control, you can do that. Management is one of those things. When you manage your platform, you talk to your own premises. There is integration with some cloud-level management. For example, you can talk to the cloud to configure your Azure AD and claims and federation, that kind of thing. When you use cloud-based features, you manage with the cloud, but when you use your on-premises stuff, you manage it locally in your own servers. Questions? Other questions? Question there?
Question is minimum requirements for on-premise Exchange and SharePoint for use with the Azure RMS Hub.
You're talking about the Hub, or you're talking about Azure RMS in the cloud? In the cloud. So for that, we use the Azure RMS connector that interfaces between those servers. The versions supported today are Exchange 2010, Exchange 2013, SharePoint 2010, and SharePoint 2013. In all these cases, with service packs, roll-up updates, or whatever they are calling their respective versions, the ones that were new by, I think, March. So anything after those March releases, I think it's RU3, CU3 for Exchange, and for SharePoint is the latest service pack that was released about that time. You may need to do some minor updates in those servers. For example, the latest version of the RMS client need to be installed in those servers. And you also need to do some minor configurations, basically telling this server, whenever you have to work with RMS, here's the hub, because if they look at the URL in a document, for example, they will say, oh, I need to talk to the cloud. And since they don't know how to talk to the cloud directly, that will fail. So you basically configure the servers. So they say, whenever I need to work with this content, I'm going to talk to the connector, not the hub, so, sorry. They need to talk to the connector, and then the connector takes care of it. So it's minor configurations that you have to do on each server, and that basically prime this server to work with the connector so they can activate against the cloud and deal with the content. Another question here?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, yeah. The Azure Key Management Service is the question and limitations. This is actually a really important point. Today, when you choose to use what we call Bring Your Own Key with the Azure Key Management Service and you're using O365 integration, Exchange Online is not supported. So you can use SharePoint Online. You can all of your clients have full IRM capabilities using that, I'll call it topology choice. But Exchange is not able to process email through OAuth, ActiveSync, and those cases. We're working on that. I don't have a public commitment on the date on that yet, but again, back in Redmond, that is an active project that is super important to us. We've heard loud and clear that's obviously an unacceptable trade-off, so we will hopefully have news on the public dates on that in a couple of months.
And if I can add one additional constraint to that. When you work with Exchange Online basically does its own IRM internally. That means that they don't talk to RMS for every operation. They do everything internally. And that's the reason why it cannot work with Bring Your Own Key, because it will say, hey, give me the key here. And the whole idea of Bring Your Own Key is not giving your keys to anybody, not even being able to give them their keys. But it also means that whenever it transacts, whenever it acquires a license or whatever, it does so locally, so it doesn't show in your logs. We could have said, oh, well, let's enable Exchange to work with Bring Your Own Key, but that will have solved only part of the problem. So we decided, or the Exchange team decided, to do the right thing, which is Exchange should work like any other regular application and call Azure RMS whenever it needs to do something. That's why it's a big piece of work. It's changing the way in which Exchange works. It's not fixing a bug there. It's changing the way in which Exchange transacts against Azure RMS. But the nice thing is that when that is done, and it's already underway, as Tim said, so it shouldn't take that long, it will be a regular citizen for Azure RMS. It will log against us. It will be able, for example, to work with revocation. We revoke content, and Exchange will try to acquire a license. It says, oh, no, this content is revoked, so I'm not going to be able to render this for this user. So you gain all the functionality that you will expect just because now Exchange is working against Azure RMS as any other application. And Bring Your Own Key in addition to that.
Okay, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left. Any other questions out there? Is there something?
Let me say one thing. We need to leave the stage in 4 minutes because there is a big demo preparation here coming in. But we're going to answer a few more questions in these 4 minutes, and then we will just move to the side, and any other questions you have, we can answer one-to-one. So you have another question.
I'm sorry, so the question is, with the HSM key management service, how are we making it high availability? Oh, it's fantastic. It's distributed, so everything in Azure RMS and Azure KMS is a multi-data center distributed architecture. So effectively, we can take that offline for the details, but when you submit a key from on-premise and you bring your own key, we basically write it to multiple HSMs. Yeah.
And one clarification about that, you still own the root version of your key, the source of that key. The way to make it highly available is put that in a safe. We don't need to talk to it occasionally, so you just make sure that you don't lose that HSM because that's your copy of the key. In our data centers, when you do the synchronization of the key, that goes towards a bunch of HSMs that are distributed and highly available themselves, so we don't need your device to be online and highly available all the time.
Question? Okay, so if I understood correctly, can you build authorization policies based on the location of the requester? Is that your question? Okay, today, no. That's a great feature, though. We've heard that asked many times, something we're looking at. Today, though, we don't enforce any IP or location-based policies. It's all just based on the user identity and the device type. I love that feature, though, and we are looking at some third-party ways to integrate some. We have fantastic location-based authentication services. Generally speaking, we would push that to the authentication decisions, which is can you authenticate from those places, but adding it to the RMS policy is something we're also looking at. So, but not today.
Yeah, we have the right plumbing to do that. We have RMS has awareness of all the necessary elements, such as where the request comes from. So it's not something that we need to radically change the way we do RMS. But we simply haven't implemented that feature yet. We have a long pipeline of things that we are implementing. That's one of them that we want to do, but it's not in the current bunch of things that we're building right now.
All right, one more question, then we'll just we'll vacate the stage and be happy to answer questions down from the floor.
Can
I'm sorry,
that louder?
I couldn't hear you. Yes. The question is, can we protect things like CAD files?
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. So actually, we didn't talk about that today, but there's some fantastic stuff we're doing. So there's two things that we have in market now. One is what we call generic file protection, or PFile, where we encapsulate a CAD file in an RMS wrapper. You still get all of the authentication, encryption, and policy decisions at the wrapper. You think about like a RMS zip file, if you will. So we actually can package that up, transport it, still authenticate the user with the appropriate policies, get the tracking. But then once those things are happened, then the file is decrypted and handed off to the native application. So once it gets into the native application, the rights are no longer enforced by RMS. It's sort of best efforts there. We also, though, are working on this fantastic thing, what we call the PJT. There's a format for interop between CAD vendors. They're working with a number of companies throughout the European automotive industry to basically build native RMS protection in some of the CAD tooling there, working with Siemens and some other folks. And that should be coming to market in the next couple of months also.
Actually, now we have both 2D and 2D and 3D JT integration. We didn't have time to do a demo for that, but you can see a 3D engine rotating, whatever, and that is rights protected with the JT work. JT is very commonly used for CAD collaboration between companies, and we think that is the primary scenario. So if I'm working inside my lab with a piece, I probably want to have full control, but when I send it to my supplier or whatever, that I protect as JT, and they can work with the standard JT tools that are RMS enabled to do all that secure collaboration. And more, we also work with CATIA. They are updating their solution to work with Azure RMS, and we hope to see more CAD vendors starting with this JT thing. Most CAD vendors should adopt native protection. In the meantime, you can use either JT, convert things to JT to share them, or protect them generically with the generic protection that Tim mentioned.
Okay, actually, I think we have run out of time here officially. So, again, I'm happy. Thank you for attending. I appreciate your time. Hopefully, we gave you something interesting to think about. And.